This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Tracking HIV cases in rural West Virginia is vexing, but critically important to stop the spread.
If we have one case, we know that we have at least 2 to 3 more that are undiagnosed in our community already. And if it's related to injection drug use, it's probably higher than that.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. Roughly one-third of American women have struggled to afford products like pads and tampons, according to a 2023 survey from data analytics firm YouGov. Activists call this barrier to access period poverty. They say its impact is felt across American life, from the classroom to the prison system. Lacey Giroux is Director of Government Relations at the Alliance for Period Supplies, a nonprofit network working to expand access to period products nationwide. She spoke to reporter Jack Walker about the danger of period poverty and what folks across the country are doing to address it.
So what exactly is period poverty, and how is it impacting lives across the United States?
Sure. Yeah. So 2 in 5 people have struggled to purchase period products, and that's period poverty. It's the inability to afford an adequate supply of period products to manage one's period or menstrual cycle. What we see is that period poverty sort of exacerbates this vicious cycle of poverty by forcing menstruators to withdraw from daily life, lose pay, or miss educational opportunities, or even risk infections by using proxy products such as socks or toilet paper, or not changing products as often as needed. So our organization, I'm sure you saw on the website, but we're a national network of individual nonprofits that are working in their local communities to address period poverty. And so those individual nonprofits collect, warehouse, and distribute period supplies. So they're doing that on the ground work. And then we also do awareness raising, research, and advocacy to truly target and try to, you know, eradicate the issue of period poverty in the U.S.
What are some reasons an individual might struggle to afford period products?
You know, one of the reasons that period products can be difficult to access in the U.S. is the cost. They're quite expensive for something that is basic, essential, and, you know, needed by anyone who has a period. And in some states, they're even more expensive because they're charged a sales tax on the product, which is the case in West Virginia. And then additionally, period supplies are not covered by any government assistance program like SNAP or WIC. So it really, you know, forces people that have periods to really spend money, their own money, on products. And that can sometimes be challenging, especially for young individuals.
I know one setting where this plays out is in the classroom. Just last year, state lawmakers here in West Virginia considered but didn't fully pass a bill to provide free period products to all schools in the state. Could you speak to how this issue is affecting students?
Yeah, so we see that students are impacted by lack of access to period products. And the impact on the educational setting is quite tremendous. Because a study, it was actually conducted by Period, another national organization that we work closely with, and Thinks. And so they worked together on a study. The first time the study was done was in 2021, and then it was repeated again in 2023. And both times that study found that 1 in 4 students have struggled to purchase period products. So that's caused them to miss school and class time because they don't have those products that they need. So they're staying home, or maybe they're in class, but they're distracted thinking about where their next product will come from, or if they'll have to use some sort of proxy item to just make it through that school day.
And obviously this work doesn't just affect youth. I know your organization also advocates for expanding period product access in prisons and jails. Could you speak a little to that work too?
Yeah, this is really complicated because there's laws around period products in prisons across the country, but they vary in outline and implementation. And so some states are, they require that period products are available for those that are incarcerated, but they have to request them or they have to pay for them at the commissary. And sometimes they don't say, you know, how much that's going to be. And so it's quite a challenge across the country. In many states where there's just this barrier to access, and, you know, you don't know if you're going to get the adequate amount of products that you need to get through your period. And we're even seeing and hearing in some states that this is causing sort of an issue between guards, who might be the ones that have the products, and those that are incarcerated. And it creates that kind of unequal balance of power for somebody who's just trying to manage their period. And so not having the access in prisons is a health problem, and it's also a dignity problem.
Beyond just buying and distributing more period products, what are some solutions people are pursuing nationally to end period poverty?
Yeah, I'll start with the federal. So at the federal level, there's been a few bills that have been introduced, but the big one, it's the comprehensive bill, is called the Menstrual Equity for All Act. And it was introduced by Congresswoman Grace Meng, and she's been introducing this legislation for quite some time. And every year it sort of, there's another layer added because we're realizing that, you know, we need products in addition to schools, we need them in shelters, we need them in prisons. And so this bill really works to comprehensively address that. It targets access in schools, prisons, shelters, public buildings. So it would provide funding for that.
And at the state level?
Talked about schools, there are 28 states and D.C. that have passed bipartisan legislation to increase access to period products in schools. And then there are efforts across the country in the 20 states that still charge sales tax on period products to get rid of that tax. So the items are seen as basic necessities and not luxury goods. And I think that issue particularly is making people really frustrated because it's a very unfair tax that only, you know, one portion of the population has to pay.
That was Lacey Giroux with the Alliance for Period Supplies, speaking with Jack Walker about barriers to accessing period products and what folks nationwide are doing to reduce them. For more information on the organization, visit our website at wvpublic.com. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Becoming mostly sunny today. Highs in the 60s and 70s. Clear tonight with lows in the 40s. And sunny tomorrow with highs in the 70s and low 80s. Support for WVPB is provided by Solar Holler, building on West Virginia's history of powering the nation by bringing solar power to the coal fields. More at solarholler.com. Among U.S. states, West Virginia ranks 18th in the rate of new HIV infections. But that may be an incomplete picture, especially in rural communities where some health officials worry that cases are going undetected. West Virginia Public Broadcasting has joined with the Global Health Reporting Center with support from the Pulitzer Center to report this story. Here's Caleb Hellerman.
After splashing through a few puddles, the administrator of the Mingo County Health Department is showing off his state-of-the-art mobile medical van.
It has a refrigerator. All it does lack is a sink. You have to use a portable hand washing station.
Last year, Keith Blankenship sent this van around the county conducting HIV testing.
So it was probably 200 to 300 people. Could have been a little more than that.
In that relatively small group, several people tested positive for HIV.
We did get some positive results.
But you wouldn't know it from the official state tally, in which Mingo County reported zero new cases of HIV.
Zero cases.
I mean, do you think that reflects how many infections you probably have?
No, because...
That's because to report a case requires a second confirmatory test. And when the county nurse tried to follow up, none of those patients could be found.
Most time we only get one shot or one chance to work with a person.
A spokeswoman for the State Department of Health and Human Resources told us that it doesn't have all the details in Mingo County, but that the agency has staff around the state to help track people down, to conduct confirmatory testing, and to connect those patients with care. But Mingo County isn't alone. In Nicholas County, which reported 4 cases the past 2 years, Dr. Anita Stewart, the health officer, says the official count is just the tip of the iceberg.
My concern is that if we have one case, we know that we have at least 2 to 3 more that are undiagnosed in our community already. And if it's related to injection drug use, it's probably higher than that.
So far this year, the county reported 0 cases in IV drug users.
Do you think that reflects reality?
No.
How big an issue is HIV in some of these smaller counties?
It's hard to know.
It is hard to know what's happening with HIV in rural West Virginia. In most counties, there is no regular outreach and testing program. In Mingo County, it's on hold because that medical van was just a loaner from the State Office of Threat Preparedness.
The state sent out a memo that we had to park the vans because the grant did not take in consideration for the cost of operation to buy fuel, to license it, put stickers on it, to do oil changes and so forth. I mean, we're in July, so it's been 7 months this year.
In most rural counties, HIV testing involves a patchwork of small organizations.
It's a work in progress, right?
Brooke Parker, a social worker from the Ryan White program at Charleston Area Medical Center, has the job of trying to knit them together. She's the coordinator for 22 counties.
We've got a really small team, you know.
We're headed to Lincoln County, about halfway between Charleston and Huntington.
We lose cell phone service at some point out here.
As far as Parker knows, there's been no HIV testing here for months.
Are there a lot of counties like that?
Yeah.
Today she's meeting a woman who works at a local clinic and wants to help.
Lindsay was telling me that she has people regularly asking her, where can I get tested for HIV?
You can't be in 10 counties at once.
Absolutely not. We tried.
Lincoln County reported 0 HIV cases in intravenous drug users, but Parker and Lindsay Bias, the worker at the clinic, personally know at least 2 residents who are being treated in either Charleston or Huntington.
And so our assumption is that there's more cases than we know about.
You called them at Pinecrest?
Yeah, I sent them to Huntington. And how he was saying, like, you know, there's like, you know, 0 reported cases around here. It's because nobody's getting tested.
Parker lays down the tailgate of her pickup truck and sets up the gear.
HIV and then Hep C.
One man is already waiting.
First time I've been tested.
You ready?
Yeah.
Don't cry now.
A drop of blood, mix the chemicals. This rapid HIV test will give results in about 20 minutes. Parker also runs tests for hepatitis C, syphilis, and a second, different HIV test. This one only takes a minute. With 2 test results, there's no issue of having to find the patient again to confirm. Next up is a house call.
We're gonna go up a holler here. It's a known place where a lot of people hang out and use, and I've got 4 of them who agreed to be tested.
We turn on a narrow dirt lane and drive another mile until we see a man who's wrestling with the engine of a riding mower. Parker backs her truck into the driveway.
Jennifer's going to get tested.
A tall woman, around 50 years old, helps everyone read and sign the consent paperwork. One by one, they come forward.
That's cool. I mean, yeah, a lot of people need to be tested. They need, you know, to have that done to know that, you know, if you do have it, don't be sharing no needles. And I have a friend who does have HIV, and it really breaks my heart for her because she has 4 small children.
Friends who are sick, but these guys weren't offering tests.
Probably wouldn't get tested.
But every place presents a fresh challenge. In Mingo County, Keith Blankenship is lobbying state officials to get his mobile unit back.
I've got high hopes. In other words, I think that everybody involved wants to do the right thing and get it back on the road. As usual, there's always legalities, but we're trying to let our voice be heard, that the people of Mingo County deserves that van to be put in use.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caleb Hellerman in Williamson.
This is part of a series we're calling Public Health, Public Trust. Tune in next Wednesday to hear the next story. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University and Marshall University, School of Journalism and Mass Communications. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Maria Young. Maria Young produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.